John and Evelina Burton are in their late 70s and grow Valencia peanuts in Marion County, Florida. That particular type of peanut grows on plant roots, so John and Evelina must bend over, yank each plant out of the ground, and then pick the peanuts off the roots. It's backbreaking labor. 85-year-old Rosa Murphy still goes out every morning to work the land on her farm in Georgia. That's after she's cooked breakfast for her husband, Eddie, who became blind after a stroke more than 20 years ago. The Burtons and the Murphys are independent black farmers, part of a way of life that's fast vanishing. To document their stories before they're gone, award-winning freelance photographer John Francis Ficarra traveled through much of the southeastern United States for a book of photos called Black Farmers in America. NPR's Juan Williams wrote the accompanying essay. If you have questions about the tradition and the plight of black farmers, give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can go to our website at npr.org right now to look at some of the photographs we'll be talking about. John Francis Ficarra joins us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hello, Neil.
And Juan Williams joins us from the studios of our member station in West Palm Beach, Florida, WXEL. Hey, Juan.
Good to be with you, Neil.
Okay. John Francis Ficarra, you have several photographs of Rosa Murphy in your book. In one, she's tilling the ground. In another, standing in a field wearing a wide-brimmed straw hat with a white puff of cloud floating just over her head. But the one that's particularly poignant, I think, is when she's with her husband, Eddie. Tell us a little bit about that picture. How did you come to take it?
Well, most of what I do is spend a lot of time with the farmers. And I try and spend about five days with each farmer. And in talking with a couple of other farmers, they had recommended I stop and see Rosa Murphy. And I called her up, and she invited me to come down the following day. And in doing that, I basically arrive at sunrise and go with her throughout the day. I spent the morning with her on the porch, setting up Eddie, giving him a pitcher of water and his telephone, and then she goes off to off into the fields to work.
When you say you spent 5 days with him, I assume you don't start taking pictures in the first minute.
No, I don't. A lot of what I do is I talk to farmers, and I really have questions for them. I ask them to really tell me about their life and what they do in their life and what's important to their lives. And then I try and incorporate what they tell me into a visual communication and try and translate what they've told me visually.
And are some of your pictures, as you're saying, are posed. You set them up. And are others more spontaneous?
Well, there's only a couple of a series of pictures that have been posed where they're actually portraits taken. Most of the pictures that are taken are a result of me in a conversation with a farmer. And there was something that the farmer had told to me, whether it be that day or days before, that I felt was very important. And I kind of stored that away in my mind, that phrase or that quote that he had just given me. And then I try and translate that visually in the days ahead. And there are several photographs that convey that, you know, that sentiment.
And Juan Williams, let me bring you in here. You say in your essay that this is an attempt to capture a picture of twilight.
You know, Neil, it's a passing of an era, and what John Ficarra has done is spent a tremendous amount of time, and that's what it takes here, is perseverance and patience to capture what is really a fading era in American life. In the essay, I draw the analogy to the passing of the American cowboy or to the people who were the trailblazers, Lewis and Clark, who went out west. You stop and you think about those people as American icons. The idea of the black farmer is an iconic image in the American mind because it takes us back to days of slavery. I think if you look at John Ficarra's pictures, you come away with an immediate image of poor black people oftentimes living at the minimum level of existence, I mean, scraping out a living from the land. And, of course, then as you progress from slavery, you come to peonage and sharecroppers. And these folks are not, in many cases, not doing much better. Now, if you stop and think about it, farming on the whole in the United States, you know, individual people farming is a difficult business. People are being family farmers are going away. They're passing into history as well as we see more corporate farming and all the rest. But what you see in terms of black farmers is they did not get the support from the agriculture department, oftentimes subjected to racism in terms of subsidies, monies needed, loans and from banks and the like. And as a result, a tremendous history in the black farmer is just about gone. John might know the exact number, but there are very few black farmers left in America today, which is a great irony given that almost all black American wealth is rooted in people who, after the Civil War, were able to get land.
Hmm. Yeah. There's there's less than 18,000 farmers left in the United States right now, black farmers, family farmers, and that's down from 2.2 million at its peak. And also the land value was at the peak of black agriculture, there were about 15 million acres being farmed by black farmers. And today there's less than 2.2 million.
And some of the farmers you were talking to said they didn't necessarily do this anymore for the money, but really as a way of life.
Yeah. It's out of tradition, yes. Many of the farmers continue to do this. But I think, you know, all family farms today are under stress and struggling due to the larger corporate farms, as Juan just said. Black farmers have been going out of business, as they say, three times, four times quicker than their white counterpart family farms. Mm-hmm. So I really viewed this as a piece of American history and also a piece of American agriculture, you know, a scene on the American agricultural landscape that was actually disappearing. And I took it with that in mind to try and document as much as I can before it is all gone.
Mm-hmm. There's one picture in your book that almost seems to capture this exact story. And I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it. Is it Loudon Marshall or Loudon Marshall?
It's Loudon Marshall.
Yeah,
Loudon Marshall, when I had visited him in that photograph, it shows three generations. It shows Loudon, who's tying his son, his grandson, Cullen's shoelace. And his son, Loudon III, is in the background. And we were this was about the third day I had spent with Loudon. We were walking from his chicken house to his farm up this little dirt path. And prior to my arriving at the farm, on a conversation I had with Loudon over the telephone, he had told me that his son, Loudon III, had indeed told him that week that he did not want to continue farming, that he was going to start to seek employment off the farm. Well, that was one of those bits of information that I kind of stored away in my head. And it was, I guess, into the third day that I was with Loudon that we were walking from this chicken house, as I said, to the home. And his son was standing there in the background looking at me, and as I was taking this picture, and then he turned and he walked away. And that to me, and when I took that photograph, that to me represented actually what was going on in the lives of those people in that farm in particular. Mm.
If you'd like to join our conversation again, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And again, you can see some of these photographs on our website as well, npr.org. But let's go to the phones, and Malachi joins us from, is that Richmond County in Georgia?
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. I was a black farmer. When I was a youngster, we farmed. We had about 200 acres. We had a dairy farm. We had a sugar cane mill. We had the only sugar cane mill in the whole county. And we were doing well. But what happened was, it's like the county administrators, they changed the laws, because before then we could haul our sugar cane and our syrup all to the A&P and Unity Market into Augusta and sell it. All our vegetables, we had a dairy farm, our milk, our butter, our chickens, we had them about 1,000. And they passed a law so we couldn't sell anymore. We had to sell it to the officials in the county. And they gave us peanuts for our goods, so it put us out of business. It was evil what they done. And this is what has put many black farmers out of business, just like right here, we're doing Clinton's administration. When we marched up there in Washington on Glickman's office about taking and not supporting black farmers and subsidizing with finance like to do the white farmers, we've never received our fair share in the government. We're not looking for a handout, but we like our fair share like everybody else receives as well.
Juan Williams, you write about experiences like Malachi's in the essay.
And I spoke to...
Well, without a doubt, what you see is, you know, remember, as I said to you, Neil, you're talking about something that really represents America's struggle with race. And I just think Fakara's pictures are just so resonant. You know, they really, you said poignant, but I think that what you look at when you see these pictures, we talked about this fading twilight, you know, a mm-hmm. distant echo of an age past. But what you see is the relationship to the land, and part of that relationship is... Of course, the famous 40 acres and a mule promise after the Civil War, General Sherman's promise to the freed slaves that you can get 40 acres and a mule, and this will be your stake. You'll have an opportunity to be independent people. That promise of land then progresses, as you see, black people try, you know, they're coming out of a situation where they have no education, they have no wherewithal, and they're trying to make a go with it to keep their families together, to support themselves. And eventually what you see is that the racist relationship that is part of American history then comes to interfere in the ability of black farmers to sustain themselves. So when Malachi talks about the county administrators, the people who are running the local offices of the agriculture department, looking out for white farmers first, because all these officials, of course, are white people, they're looking out for their white neighbors first before they will look out for the black farmers. The black farmers oftentimes just don't get the money to plant the seed in time. They don't get the money to get help in terms of the harvest. Just time and again, they get the last piece. And as a result, you just see them going away and away. And that's why we talk about distant echoes or fading to twilight.
Mm-hmm. Malachi, you said you used to be a farmer. What do you do now?
I'm retired now. I'm up in my 70s.
Mm-hmm. And are you sad to see that this way of life pass away?
I beg your pardon?
Are you sad to see this way of life?
Oh, yes. I love farming. Farming was great for us. We was living good. We didn't have a Rolls Royce. We went to church. We had a clean house. My grandfather, we built our own houses. And we were living good. Mm-hmm. And we weren't all, you know, suffering. I know there were many farmers that were jilted with the whites that shell crop. Each year you went in the hole, regardless whether you had a great crop or not. The white farmers would take the advantage of the blacks and take everything they had. Mm-hmm. And many times they were shot at in the middle of the night and chased off their lands and ran away with guns. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that done, too.
Malachi, thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. And good luck to you.
You're quite welcome.
We're talking about a new book of photographs called Black Farmers in America. The pictures are by John Francis Ficarra. There's an essay by NPR's Juan Williams. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Shane. Shane calling us from Lynchburg in Virginia.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
I heard someone make a comment earlier that a lot of family and individual farmers are stepping back and being taken over and overrun by corporate farms. But in Virginia and a lot of the areas around where I live, I see a big resurgence in organic farming and communal farms. I was wondering if anyone had done any research on the rise in black farmers turning towards organics to get into that market.
Yes, actually, there are a lot of farmers who are looking at alternative methods of farming, who are turning their farms into organic farms as well as other methods of farming as well. There was one farmer I came across in Alabama who actually started a rabbit farm, and it was due to medical research as well as food.
Shane, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Juan Williams, let me ask you, this iconic way of life, this is something that's idealized a lot in American society, the idea of the simple life. In fact, when you look at the life of a farmer, and you mentioned this, this is not simple. It requires a huge variety of skills, and it requires the guts of a gambler.
It really does, Neil. I think it's deceptive, and that's one of the things that I mentioned in the essay was, you know, you look at this life and you think, oh, my gosh, you know, such a simple time, you know, in the past where people could simply work the earth and they would get the fruit of their labors and go to market. And, it was, you know, your family's all lives on the farm. The children work on the mm-hmm. farm. But you stop and you think about it and you're having to manage the economics. The economics themselves are so complex. The whole notion of when you plant, when you don't plant, what you plant, the relationship to government, the politics of it, in addition to the economics, all makes for an extraordinarily, as I say, deceptively complex way of life. In addition to which, think about the pressures that come generationally, Neil. The great migration of African Americans going north occurs in the 30s. But what you have is, to this day, pressure on those farmers in terms of aspirations of young people to go to the big city and look for a better life, even as they're struggling to get their due and make a way of life, sustain a way of life, if you will, right there on the farm. Mm-hmm. Again, the complexities, it just overwhelms you once you start to look and say, well, gee, I thought these were simple people. No, these people had to be extraordinarily thoughtful, calculating, and willing to gamble, as you said, to make that way of life a success.
And John Ficarra.
It really is a gamble for many farmers, family farms these days. And it was very apparent to me as well in traveling around the country that those farms that were doing well, the children were more likely to continue in the tradition of their parents and grandparents and farm. Those farms that were struggling and that were really on the edge of just hanging in there, the children more likely were to leave and work off the farm.
But as we were talking about Loudon Marshall's farm, situations like that, how does he look at this future? Of course, I'm sure he wants his son to go off and have a better life, yet this tradition stretching back, as Juan has been saying, since the end of the Civil War, this is dying.
Yes, and if Loudon III decides he doesn't want to come back to do the farm at any point, even if he starts to work off the farm right now and continues to have maybe a small hand in it, you know, it might succeed. But many farmers today and many of the families whose children have indeed moved off the farm are starting to look into other ways of using that land to make a profit. Turning their farms, what might have been a produce farm for the second generation, is now perhaps a tree farm in this generation.
John Francis Ficarra, thanks very much for joining us today. We appreciate your time. John Francis Ficarra joined us here in Studio 3A. Juan, thank you.
You're welcome, Neil.
NPR's Juan Williams joined us from the studios of member station WXEL in West Palm Beach in Florida. Their new book is called Black Farmers in America. To see some of the pictures we talked about along with Juan's introduction to the book, you can visit our website at npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.